Welcome, everybody, to the first ever Renegade HPG live stream. We have DC Bruins here today to talk all about MechWarrior Bulldogs, which hopefully you guys caught almost exactly a week ago. It has been, man, it's been crushing on YouTube. And I will say that finally about 2-3 days ago, the algorithm caught it. And
oh, good.
Actually started recommending it to people. So now it's starting to be seen by people who aren't just coming from Facebook and Reddit. So.
Oh, nice.
Good stuff. But we are going to be talking today all about that creative process. For those of you that are in the chat and watching live, you know, throw your questions in there and we will kind of watch them and see them and answer them as we go. Before we get started, I do want to give a special shout out to Renegade HPG sponsor, Fortress Miniatures and Games. Their support really helps make a lot of things happen on this channel. And was a customer with them long before they were a sponsor. So I can definitely attest to the fact that they are very good at giving you great product at prices that I wonder how they stay in business at times. So definitely go to fortressminiaturesandgames.com if you need any Battletech swag. But today, let's go ahead and dive in. Before I do get started, I do also want to remind people while we're talking about kind of sponsorship, I would love to kind of drive some support Dan's way through this live stream. Dan just set up a Patreon recently and has been putting some pretty awesome updates on there, including a little, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Like a post-credits scene that went up there today? Or maybe a part
or like,
two?
Yeah, like a beginning of an episode two, maybe? Like a first draft of an episode two, perhaps?
Okay. Excellent.
Something of that sort.
But definitely some good extra Patreon content there. So that is, I think I have a pinned comment there on that YouTube live stream. So that is patreon.com/SirDubDub, not DC Bruins. We're using your super cool artist tag there.
The really old username that I got stuck with from 2007. Yeah.
SirDubDub on Patreon. Check it out. First tier starts at $1. The next tier is $3.10. But yeah, if we can, I would love to see if we can drive that up to $200 in that live stream. So I'm going to keep dropping that tag, see if we can kind of get people on, throw a dollar his way. But in the meantime, there's also a little tag there at the bottom of the chat. So if you want a question, tag that question with a little bit of contribution and all that, I will send over to Dan once this is done, because I would love to see more animatics and animation from this this brilliant creator. So, but with that in mind, let's dive in, man. This, this was really fun kind of being a part of this, certainly with the gallery 3025 and kind of sending that first artist grant your way.
Yeah,
and to get something like this was awesome. And so, you know, what were you, you're probably what, about 2/3 of the way done with this before we connected to kind of push it?
Yeah, I had, folks have seen the movie, I had everything sort of sketched out up until that point where the camera cuts back away to like the Masakari, because I refuse to use the word Warhawk, doing that little like circle of death with the Centurion, that like last little, basically, so like that sort of act three climax, none of that had been done yet. Everything up until that point had at least had like the bones sketched out of it. And that was a project that I had just been like plinking away at from like July until like early September, at which point I basically looked at how things were proceeding outside and how like what I was going to be doing going forward, because I was employed as a graphic designer from a really good, nice little firm here locally up until March 20th 2020, and then they said, oh, there is, the economy crashed, there is no money, sorry guys.
Yeah.
So basically at that point in like September, October, I sat down and I said, okay, so what I do have here is a whole lot of people who are still asking for art and asking for commissions. So I'm just going to do as much of that as I can. And I suppose it's a good problem to have. Those kept coming in faster than I could kick them back out again. And I just couldn't get back to the movie. So yeah, it's, you know, c'est la vie. But it was absolutely fantastic to be able to not only dive back into finishing this film that I wanted to have done and out to the world for several months now, but also be able to do it while having health insurance. That's a good thing to have in this country. Yeah,
our grant from Gallery 38.5. That's how it was well used.
Yep.
Well, did the concept for this come last summer, or had you been thinking about it for a while? And last summer is just when you kind of started to actually kind of execute on it.
Okay, so two things basically started the ball rolling for this film. Thing number one, I actually just had a short conversation with a text from the Black Pants Legion about just like, you know, how do you commit to like making content, making art, making whatever the thing is you're doing in the face of some sort of like obstacle. In this case, we were talking about just like the sort of legal gray area that BattleTech fan animations existed in at that point. This was before the folks at Hired Steel got basically like the rights to make things from PGI. So I was talking to Tex, and Tex basically just said, you know what, man, just make something. The worst they can do is stop you.
Yeah.
It's basically what it boiled down to. And I went, oh, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, let's do this. So that was like the main impetus of just like, yeah, okay, we're gonna do this thing. The second thing that really got the ball rolling was I'd been working on my sort of like writing and scripting and like making stories ability over the last year or so. I am like literally right next to a fire station right now, so.
Uh-oh.
I apologize. This is just the ambient sounds of my life.
All right.
So about like, I want to say like May to August of 2020, I did a sort of deep dive on just like going through writing. And I found myself with a series of lectures that the young adult science fiction and fantasy author Brandon Sanderson gave to his alumni BYU. So it's like someone had just like recorded him giving this class, right? And Sanderson is a very well established, like very popular young adult sort of author. Really like good books. And his like basic takeaway was the way that I construct my stories is I take some sort of established story structure or genre or trope, and I like combine it with an unexpected piece of science fiction or fantasy, you know, like I don't know, like tropes, right? So he actually, the example that he gave in his lecture was a series called Mistborn, which is like, this is the pitch, right? It is a fantasy setting heist.
Okay.
So instead of like safe crackers, you have like a wizard alchemist that can like melt through the door or something like okay. that, right? And so you basically go through all of that sort of idea, all of that the emotional beats and the core appeal of whatever sort of story you're going for, mm-hmm. In order to get something out like that. The most recent book was that I had read at that point was something called Skyward. That's an odd siren. Yeah. Apparently there is some nonsense going on in my state at this point at this moment. So we're just gonna move on past that. The most recent book that I had read was called Skyward, which was the story of a boy finds a dragon egg and raises the dragon in secret. Right. So like the How to Train Your Dragon story. Yeah. But in this case, the boy is a girl and the dragon is an intergalactic starfighter.
Okay.
Right. And basically,
Starfighter, like a ship,
like meow. Yeah. So she's repairing this ship in the middle of like trying to survive in her dystopian like post-apocalyptic society, right? Mm-hmm. And she has to keep it hidden for whatever. I'm getting off track. What we're trying to get at here is, I took a look at that, and I said, the BattleTech universe is such a vast and rich setting that you have the ability to tell essentially any sort of story you really want to.
Totally. Yeah.
In this sort of thing. So I said, you know what? Let's make a heist movie. Let's make a BattleTech heist movie. What are the core? I just like went back and I watched that Sanderson lecture of like, what are the core appeals of a heist movie? It is the thrill of getting away with it. It is unorthodox and dynamic characters creatively solve unexpected problems. It is seeing a plan come together and having everything sort of like come to a head in that sort of like last moment. It's seeing plucky characters overcome overwhelming odds, right? And all of that is set to a very momentum based the word for putting one sequence of events after another sequence of it, pacing, you're like a momentum based pacing with a rapidly rising tension to keep things kind of breathless. And you basically sat down and said, okay, so that's definitely something that I could do. I could do like that could be a short self-contained story with about 3 minutes. Do I have any music that would fit this thing? And I went back and I looked back at this art and like role play group that I had been involved with since like 2016, right? So it's like a big old group of like 30 to 50 artists, illustrators, comic book folks that are like writing their own characters in this communal setting. They had a plot event a couple of years back, which was supposed to be a hostage crisis, where you had characters inside and outside of this like fortress that had been taken over by the bad guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically the dungeon masters of that group was like, hey, Sir Dubdub, hey Dubs, do you want to just like write a theme for this, for this plot event? I'm like, that sounds awesome. Let's do that.
And I don't think people realize, or maybe just that one, you created the score for this. So you didn't just animate it. And two, if people go onto Daniel's YouTube page, which is DC Bruins, that you have tons of samples, and also little animation samples too, of kind of test clips that you've done for Freehat, for MechWarrior Origins, for MechWarrior Revival. So definitely check that out. But yeah, so continue. Now that everyone knows your other amazing talent.
Yeah, I think like one of the next sort of Patreon like posts or like things that is going to be shared with people is like the high quality wave files of all these little like bits of orchestra. So we'll just throw that up on like a Google Drive and people can go download them and say, hey, cool, have a soundtrack for like a MechWarrior 5 mod or just like playing around with the MechWarrior 4 menu music, or here's a theme from a Dungeons and Dragons campaign, guys. It's so cool.
Awesome.
So basically what happened at that point was I took a look at that theme, which had been written in an old version of the music program that I'm working in now, which is called Logic Pro. The old version is, it was just Apple GarageBand, which is just comes pre-installed on like all Apple computers, right? It's very easy to learn digital audio workface. And in 2019, just before everything went to hell, I had actually invested in an upgrade for like my entire like audio composition system, including a new computer to be able to handle a whole bunch of really nice sound effects, an upgrade to the software to write everything in, and a whole bunch of live recorded sample libraries, right? where they basically they take the entire orchestra and they say, okay, all of the cellos play a staccato like G, and then play the next A up, and then you just play the next note up there. Okay. And they recorded the entire orchestra playing all of the notes.
Yeah.
All the conceivable things. Yeah. And you
got that now? Cause I know in our first director's commentary, you mentioned, it may have been off the, it may have been, you know, post credits or before the role, but you mentioned kind of wanting to pick that up.
Yeah, that was actually, I think that was in the revival trailer, and when we were going through Freehead, the bit of the Mass Effect score that had gone into just like going that was used as the backing track for Freehead was originally going to be used as a temp track, and then like written over with something that had a similar atmosphere and tension, and leaning as hard as you can on the sad notes on the piano.
Well, I know it kills your monetization of that, but God, I love that track from Mass Effect 3. And I can't tell you how I'm excited I am that the legendary version's coming out in what, 2 months, next month. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna burn another 120 hours playing Mass Effect soon.
Okay, if you want something that's like on the similar line of that particular track of the Mass Effect score, there's a movie in 2006, 2007 called The Fountain. Which Hugh Jackman tried to
I didn't see it, but I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
Clint Mansell, the guy that did the score for Mass Effect 3 and Requiem for a Dream, he did the score for The Fountain, which is basically like an hour of the saddest quartet music you will ever hear in your entire life.
Okay,
there's a track on like there's a track for the end of that movie. It's called Death is the Road to Awe, and it is like scientifically programmed to make humans cry. It's amazing. It is amazing. Clint Mansell has like unlocked like the direct like the developer console for human tear ducts. I swear to God. he's so good at making all the sad music.
Yeah. So that's interesting, because that was a question I was going to ask you, of kind of like when it comes to the pacing and setting up these shots, like what do you start with? Like, do you start with the visuals? Do you start with the sound? You know, is it kind of an interaction between the two? Because, you know, from the outside looking in, it seems like it's like, you know, if you have a soundtrack, you pick the score, and then you kind of build off that score, and maybe you can tweak it here and there. But
that is exactly what I do. Okay. It usually works the other way around in actual filmmaking, but in this case it was,
well, they get to pay people like Clint Mansell to come in and do a custom score for it.
So in this case what happened was I loaded up the old track that I had done for that sort of like hostage taking event just like onto my phone. It's just like I put about 30,000 steps in over 2 days, just like walking around my hometown, just like listening to this thing and just like visualizing what every shot was going to be.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah.
So like that moment at the very end where like the music hits and like the horns come back in and like there's just an explosion behind the Masakari. It's like, that's what's going to happen. And then the music rises here where the fighters are coming down. You have a whole bunch of drums. It's like missiles are coming. Yep, that worked. Blah, 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 blah. And basically you have that entire film in your head. And then what I did was took that music and I put that in as its own track in my animation software, and just timed the visuals as I was drawing them to the music as it was going out. Mm-hmm. And then occasionally it said, I'm just going to cut the music here because this bit needs to be a little bit longer to give it some more room to breathe. And then I'll go and rescore it later, which is what happened from like the point where our locust pilot slams an elemental into the wall up until the point where the explosion happens behind the Masakari. That was all sort of like retimed a little bit because the original track had it compressed. We just spread that out and there we go.
Awesome.
Also adding like a whole bunch of like new chords and making the strings go nuts.
Yeah. And that's when you started to kind of like time the beats with what was happening on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the beat when the explosion happens But my favorite, I still get goosebumps, the beat, and the aerospace fighters get the call and go in. Ah, I love it.
Yeah.
So good. It's so good.
I think my favorite moment is the Masakari falls, the locust foot slams down like right in front of it, and you see that like instant cut to it just like running across the across the screen. Honestly, because I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but one of the changes that went into rescoring that particular shot, something in the way that like the horn and trombone section are talking to each other and the staccato bits and the strings taking on like a new cadence, it suddenly feels like this is the third iteration of this particular like piece of music. This is the one that is triumphant. This is the one where it's like, this is what victory sounds like.
And what it feels like for that Masakari. Awesome. Let's pull up. You want to do a little screen share? We could do a little kind of shot by shot director's commentary like we did with the other ones.
Sure. Let me see if I can. How's your screen share work? Boop. I'm gonna hit the button. Let's see if that works. All right, you guys got it?
Yep.
Okay. What I'm gonna do is we're just gonna hit the. Do you want me to just like go through from the start here, or?
Yeah, let's watch it together. Yeah, do it like right. Yeah. Just let's watch it, and you can pause whenever you got something to say. But
did you guys hear the drums there? We want to like make sure the audio's working. Okay, cool.
Sound is working.
Oh, hey, look, here's the very first thing to start off with. This like opening text, this was Travis's idea, and I really appreciate that feedback. And awesome. I think that worked really well.
Yeah, no, I was happy to contribute that way. But I mean, I was they saw all creation is borrowing, right? And I just saw what Astartes did, and I was like, dude, we need an intro, because started with the fence shot and ended with the cut to MechWarrior Boardogs.
Yeah, originally I was going to start with that, just like this fence shot, and then like up in the corner here or down in the corner here, it was good. I was going to do this like smoke jaguar occupation zone 3059. Just have that like fade in like a dateline, but one that feels kind of like a cheesy and dated editing thing. And two, it probably, I think you made the right call there, and that probably doesn't provide enough context for people who aren't familiar with the BattleTech setting.
Yeah. I would say you want to give them just enough tease that there's a greater universe, but you don't want to go and explain the whole universe.
Yeah.
You know? Just so like, what Operation Bulldog? What's that? You know, what are these clans? What? It's in the 3059. Is that the year?
Right.
But yeah. And then, you know, we went back and forth on kind of the planet, right? Cause you had a non-canon planet, and I dove into Sarna to try to figure out, what is there an actual planet where this could have happened?
Right.
And we went with Asgard, cause it was, Davian was in the invasion force, and they would definitely bring mercenaries in. So.
Yeah. And we can like headcanon that the Davian forces had, I don't know, like lent this mercenary company some experimental rotary autocannons, which probably shouldn't exist for another 3 years, but we're not going to mention that right now. We'll call them ultras. It's fine.
Yep.
that is kind of like one of the things that is a little tricky about working on any sort of like new or fan fiction that like happens in the BattleTech universe. You've talked to BattleTech authors. Basically what they're doing at this point is like filling in gaps, right?
Yeah.
And because a lot of the universe has been made and detailed, so it's sometimes tricky to fit things in where they're supposed to be. So
yeah I think you know, I follow I think it's Faith McCloskey on Twitter, and she was one of the contributors to the most recent Shrapnel, and after that published, she did a little blog post on her blog about writing the BattleTech universe. And basically that was it, is you basically find a little nook in the BattleTech universe, and then you're like, what's in this closet, you know, and you explore the closet, you know. So yeah, definitely.
But like, if you wanted to write a short story that happens in the Battle of Tukian, you basically can't, because the entire thing has been documented.
Yeah.
So
But there's, you know, what was it, 1,000, 2,000 worlds, you know, across, you know, at least 1,000 light years. So there's plenty of room to tell a story.
Yeah, and like in my personal experience, the best Battletech stories are always the ones where it's like one small group of people on a single planet trying to do one specific thing against a very clearly characterized bad guy, right?
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, so we have more basically copy that was put together by Travis. I sent off a first draft and you basically crafted these sentences to perfection, and I thank you for that.
My pleasure. Dude, I've written so many press releases for the nonprofit, for the newspaper. It's great to finally write something that's fun. And not like actually self-promotional, but you're trying to not make it sound self-promotional, because, you know, for those that don't know, if you write press release for the newspaper, they essentially just cut and paste your press release and put it in there. There's no actual journalism that goes on there.
Yeah.
But no, this was a ton of fun. I got to actually use my editing skills for the first time in a couple of years.
The pay is good if they survive to spend it. I think the original line there was just like double hazard pay. I mean, like, that works, but I kind of like this a little bit more.
No, it makes
it much, much clearer. And then we
went back and forth on anti-aircraft, which was funny because you had, what do you have? Anti-aerospace. And I was like, well, it's an aerospace. And then it was like, then it's an anti, I don't know.
And then it was like anti-aircraft defense encampment. Yeah, and then we had the word defense and like listed twice in the same sentence.
Yeah, it's basically saying the same thing twice because anti is the defense.
I was like,
you're attacking yourselves if you're attacking the anti-aircraft defense. But
writing is hard.
Yeah, it is.
And then we jump right into it. This was basically literally what I did was I pulled up a new file in Adobe Animate. I dropped the score in here and just started drawing. No script. No, written documentation for any of it. It was just, here it is. We're going to get as much of it down as we can and just like do it. And the next maybe like minute or so of animation basically went out, or was sketched out at least. It's a little polished now, but the bones of it were done in like 3 days.
Nice.
Bam. We could just like start there. Like, what's the thing that I need to do as a filmmaker, as a storyteller in this thing, is get your attention and hold it long enough to say something meaningful, or like convey the information that I need to get to you. And this is trying to boil down context, information, and establishing questions in the viewer's mind in as small of a space as I possibly can, right? And like just the very simple shot of a fence, a giant foot comes down, and it just, something goes charging through. You know several things immediately right off the bat. You know, one, this person probably isn't supposed to be here. Whatever this giant thing is, probably isn't supposed to be here. Meaning, immediately we're breaking rules. We're doing something unexpected. We are somehow like being rebellious. This is going back to the Sanderson talk of why is a heist movie fun? You're seeing people like kind of like get away with it and do things they're not really supposed to. We jump back to our locus. I absolutely love this mech. I love how it looks. I love how it animates. I love how it moves. I love how quickly it just turns into a tinderbox whenever anyone sneezes at it.
They were the hired steel scene where the locust, you know, is the tracers are following the locust and the locust goes down. That is,
they've murdered my boy.
Hands down my favorite. Yeah, it's so
they've
good.
They've murdered my boy.
Best animation in that one. But poor Locust. Locust fared better in this one than it did in that one.
Yeah, because like that Locust was trying to take out like four heavy, like medium and heavy mechs.
Yeah.
And point blank. Yeah, that poor dude. He's the point where he's
running
like,
sooner, yeah.
Yeah, where he's just like slapping the dashboard because the screens aren't lighting up. That's like, yes, that's it. That is this mech. This Locust is, I will probably admit, it's probably likely some sort of custom build. I'm kind of like basing it off of the ridiculous stuff you could pull off in like MechWarrior Online. So this Locust probably has like an XL engine, endo steel, and a large laser instead of a medium.
Okay.
So like this guy isn't stock, and a lot of the machines in here aren't stock. These are supposed to be a little bit higher tier, right?
Got it.
They got a bit of fun. It's, you know, it's the largest military engagement in human history. They're gonna have a bit of money behind it.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's just pulling the MechWarrior 4 move of just turn off the radar so people can't see you.
Of course. That's how it works, right? In real life, right?
Yeah. And this bit is absolutely one of the things that I wanted to nail as soon as I could. This film is not long, and it has to tell a complete story with at the very least, like, characters you can be invested in and characters that are in some way likable. What that means is, in like the design doc in my head, is you have to cram as much characterization as you possibly can, as much personality as you can fit into every frame of this movie. And we could tell immediately who, like, what kind of person this character is, what established that they get annoyed by things, clearly, but at the end of the day are still going to do their job and just work around whatever sort of problems or obstacles arise, you know, in front of her, right? And that is the core of this character's sort of story arc throughout the rest of this film. She's going to run into things that she was not planning for and is going to have to improvise, right? Or just going to have to move on past it and get the job done anyway. And that's what we have here. Get everything closed, narrow helmet, they said. It'll be fine, they said. And here we just have transitioning to basically more set up, building the stakes here. I do very much love this stoic mustache man who, I don't think he's based on Tex, but he's a little bit based on Tex. I had him as like a slightly cheerier version of like Captain Price from Modern Warfare.
Okay.
Something like that. Like, he's a cartoon character. This is a cartoon of BattleTech. This is not the gritty, completely down to earth Game of Thrones universe. This is like a little bit pushed and a little bit accelerated to have a bit more visual impact. So we have people who are turning the radar off so they can go under, you know, under any sort of like radar screen. We have someone looking through a telescope, very low tech solution, trying to get to, oh look, there's all of the gold in the safe. Here's the thing you want to get to. There it is. That's the thing that the entire heist is based off of. And what is a good heist movie without, of course, some ridiculous security? So we just have a nice little Masakari. I was going to use the Daishi here, the massive 100-ton mech, but I was like, this guy doesn't get enough love, and he's apparently a little bit more directly connected to the Smoke Jaguars, so mm-hmm. There we go. A big old PPC boy.
No, the Masakari is awesome.
Excuse me. Yeah,
it's a great profile of a mech, so.
Yeah, and this one's a little bit more based on the MechWarrior 4 version of the machine, specifically in the way that it moves. Mm-hmm. The MechWarrior Online, like the PGI versions of these super heavy birdwalkers, they're like a little bit like look a little bit like inflatable a little bit, like they're bouncy, okay. Right? The MechWarrior 4 walk cycle for the Masakari, the Mad Cat, and like the Osiris and the Locust, like the Flea, the Mech Warrior 4 nailed the bird mechs in capturing this sort of powerful, graceful stride, right? These are confident, heavy machines, right? And that was really what I was trying to go for, and hopefully that shows up later in the movie. And
there's a couple of clips on Renegade HPG if you are interested, where Dan and I have talked about how mechs move and kind of our perception of kind of how they move and how that kind of evolves from light mech to assault mech. So definitely check out those clips. I've broken those down into shorter clips too, so you don't have to watch a 2-hour talk to kind of hear that.
Also, like fun thing, if you might notice between like the first two acts and the third act, some of like the drawings get tightened up a little bit. Like the draftsmanship, I think improves quite significantly. That was because I basically after being to like finding a connection to a sort of mentor figure who basically told me, go and look at all these resources, learn how to draw people, learn how to draw things, just go and do that. And that's just been months and months of practice, just trying to get like human anatomy and foreshortening and like dynamic motions and getting weight down and all that sort of stuff. This shot was still me figuring out how does big box mech kind of look and move. So it's still a little rough, and I think if I was to go back and do a full like polish pass on this, I might just redraw this entire shot now that I can like see where things are off. But it works for now. It does what it needs to do.
Yeah.
This is actually a redrawn shot. So you can see like more definition in the muscles. You can see basically like a full volumetric form under that chest. You can see like muscles moving around. Face actually looks like a face. Little perspective shift, and again, a low-tech solution to negate clearly like much more advanced technology.
You got to assume that radios have been jammed, otherwise those elementals are going to be given heads up.
Right.
So they got to find that way around the jammed communication.
They can't intercept your signal if you just don't talk.
Yep, exactly.
Another fun thing that happens like right here is. This is actually something that went up in the Patreon post. This line right here was originally drawn in just bright blue, and frame by frame.
Oh, so you can track.
Yeah, basically, awesome. Like the landscape was redrawn for every like individual frame of this thing.
You put that on Patreon. That was one of your Patreon exclusive things, wasn't it? Yeah.
So the idea is, this is another sort of animation and storyboarding technique that I picked up in the last year or so, is just like put a perspective grid down over, or sorry, under basically any shot that you're making, and it immediately establishes a sense of space and a sense of like where everything is in relation to each other. And I found that's a thing that I really wanted to go for, and I really wanted to get. All of these sort of perspective lines are always hand drawn. I find that gives it a little bit more like life and energy, as opposed to just using a ruler to make everything.
Yeah.
Another thing that you see here is this shot of the Locust starting to run was my own sort of realization of, oh, you draw mechs from the legs and pelvis up. Do the legs and the feet, and get where those bits are moving around. Put that down first, figure out where like how those parts move in space, and then add the upper like the upper torso and the arms and everything on top of that in order to really get the weight and motion of these machines. And then, yeah, of course, clearly.
That's an awesome shot.
Is it tactically stupid? Absolutely. Everyone in the YouTube comments. No, all of them. You are absolutely correct. This is stupid. Don't actually use a rifleman like this if you're playing tabletop. This is dumb. But it's so cool. I had to do it anyway.
Awesome.
Like, yeah, okay, we're gonna make an entrance now.
Very cool.
That's the shot that crashed my computer several times.
Oh boy.
Yeah, because you have the way that the animation program works is that this entire landscape is its own sort of it's one image, right? And you can like pan around it using a virtual camera.
Okay.
It's such a large image that like the virtual camera was having trouble, like the program was having trouble reading everything, especially since every single one of these bullet impacts is its own sort of like pre-condensed animation. So like this one's on frame two, this one's on frame three, this one's on frame four, and they're just like layered on top of each other over each individual keyframe. So there's like 50 animations, individual animations that are happening in this shot alone, and I ended up having to just like in the working timeline just insert a bunch of blank keyframes and just write the rifleman shoots here and just move on.
Now,
The computer wouldn't handle it.
is that going to happen no matter what? Or like if you got, a stronger computer that it would be all right? Is that like a hardware limitation, or is that just no matter what you do, that's going to the computer's going to struggle with it?
Yeah, the animation program that I'm using to make all of these things, it's like it's called currently Adobe Animate. It's Flash, you know, like Newgrounds from like early 2000s. It's that program, right? Which is not a great animation program, and it's not very like resource effective. It just happens to be to be the thing that I know how to use the most. The trouble with this program in particular is that it doesn't, it's RAM intensive and it refuses to use more than like 4 gigs, even if you have 30,
Okay.
right? So at some point the program is just like, I just don't want to render this out. I
It's
just
a
don't
little
want to do
easy.
it.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
got
Oh, you want me to play this? Okay, I'm just gonna crash.
Yeah.
Does that sound good? I hope you saved.
Funny.
It's infamous for doing that. So that's just sort of how it works out. I think I said in Freehat the way that I animated like 3D Max moving over like hand painted backgrounds with like fully drawn out like foreground frames, like it was breaking Flash every time I was trying to use it. It's not meant for this. I think if it, going forward, I'd like to either transition over to Blender, the 3D animation program that was used to make the Freehat mechs. They are working on a 2D animation program or like module within Blender called Grease Pencil, which looks really cool. And I want to see if I can figure out how to make it work. Either that, or there's another program called TV Paint, which is we can get into like the nitty gritty details, but it looks cool and it might be fun to use. Blender Grease Pencil would just take some time to learn. TV Paint, I'd need to get a license for that, but we can get into all of that. Warhawk firing PPCs. And yeah, this is actually a pretty late addition. Because I got to the end of the movie, and I realized that we never actually saw the rifleman go down. We just had it gets hit by it's hit by a shot and then like it blows its arm off, but it's supposed to be still shooting in the next shot. When I got to the end, I just sort of tried to put myself in the shoes of someone who had never seen this before. I go, there was supposed to be another mech there. What happened? Yeah, I see at the end this guy shooting over like a bunch of like scrap metal, but that was just the arm, right? That's just the arm. It was not just the arm. So I just added in a little bit of that for clarity. A dude just physically orders a Centurion into battle. Which is, that's always a fun one. That's another example of draw the pelvis first and draw the rest of the mech around it. On top of this is just some I like this is an aesthetically satisfying composition to me. I like how that particular landscape worked out.
And real quick, we got a question here. Rex tossing a question. Let's pull him in real quick. So Rex, hop on for everyone watching. Rex is one of the larger patrons for Gallery 3025, which is the Patreon that we use to help support Bruins in this. So Rex, hop on in. Awesome. Hello. There we go.
Hey there.
So my question was, it seems like it sounded to me like you were saying you liked having mechs with different variations, like ones that have been reinterpreted by multiple different people, so you can take the best aspects and sort of mold them, as opposed to those really weird ones that have like one interpretation and look real jank these days.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, it depends on what the specific context is supposed to be. Generally, I do like the old school of this mech is basically has essentially the same parts that it has had for the last, you know, 100, 200 years. And you want to try refitting that PPC with a large laser? Good luck, I guess. You can go for it. These guys are supposed to be a little bit more well-funded and have a little bit more just like access to resources. They're the vanguard. They're like the tip of the spear in, you know, they're in Operation Bulldog. They're going to have a bit of nicer stuff.
Okay.
Would that mean that our sort of locust pilot would be in something a little bit spicier than a locust? Probably, but I'm just headcanoning that she really likes that mech. She's like one of the three people in the galaxy that likes piloting a locust.
Hey man, yeah. You make a lot of them. Somebody's got to drive it.
Yeah. And it looks like it would be, it's like one of those mechs that would be fun to drive, right? It's like a sports car. It's like a little race car. I love it.
It's like a dirt bike. You just go zooming around everywhere.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that Centurion is stock, but you know.
Just light and medium mechs just seem like they'd be more fun to animate.
Honestly, I think my gray area at the moment is going to be heavy mechs because they're
okay.
It's like you
actually, be, yeah, looking at your dragon.
That dragon was very slow and plotting, so I'm trying to figure out the weight balance and distribution and getting the subtleties between a medium mech, which kind of would animate a little bit more like a person moving at like 3/4 speed, like a human moving at 3/4 speed, and a light mech, which gets to move around like a race car, and like the heavy mechs the assault mechs are just giant kaiju monsters. I'd probably have to figure out maybe experiment with that rifleman if it ever shows up again.
Yeah.
The elementals though, I knew exactly how I wanted those to move.
Excellent.
The cheesy like visor shine on this, like that. This should be the clue.
No, it's good, dude.
Right now, this is BattleTech the anime.
Yeah. No, elementals are going to be focused on one of the upcoming. Gallery 3025 projects. I've been talking to Jared Owen. Are you familiar with his work, Dan?
I've probably seen it, but I'm not making a connection to the name.
He's done some really, really incredible portraits for BattleTech. He did the black and white portraits of Justin Allard and Candace Allard and Ora Kerensky. And
the grayscale paintings?
The grayscale. It's not a painting. Is it a painting? It might've been, but it looks like photorealistic stuff.
Yeah.
He has a shot on his DeviantArt art station, which is like a fan commission, which is it's named Ulysses, if anyone want to look it up. So it's Jared Owens, and there's a piece there called Ulysses, and I actually linked it on the Gallery 3025 Patreon. But it was an awesome style. It's like we need to get an elemental in this style. So I've been chatting with Jared. He's pretty busy until the fall, but hopefully, you know, I got one more project in mind for the gallery between now and then, but that'll be a big project, and so hopefully we can get more support for the gallery between now and then. But I'm pumped. I just, elementals need a little bit more love.
Yeah.
And I will admit I am not a huge fan of the modern redesign of them. I love that kind of old school from the first MechWarrior source book, maybe the compendium, you know, that's my favorite elemental design. But We're gonna get some more elemental focus stuff out there for you guys.
I'm going to humbly disagree on that, but it's fine.
Yeah, that's all good.
We can have different tastes. I really love the shimmy versions.
Well, I think your opinion on that matters more than mine because you're the one that actually draws them. So nobody sees what's in my head.
Anything that I'm gonna draw is going to be by the nature of like essentialism of cartooning and animating, everything's going to be reduced, right? There's a thing in animation called like line mileage, which is literally how many strokes does every character have to like put them down. And the reason why you don't see very many hand animated giant robot shows is think of how many lines are in like the TRO art books, right? Think of doing that 24 times a second for 2 minutes of solid animation.
Yeah.
Right? Like it becomes very quickly something absolutely insane, which is why like a lot of people switch over to 3D just because you humans can physically do it, right?
Right. Well, what's when you're talking about 24 frames a second. So what are like the rules for like how much you move in each frame? Like just from the amateur, I've always wondered about that, you know. So maybe toss out some quick technical knowledge without overwhelming us, but you know, how do you decide that? How do you figure it out?
Well, if we take a look at the Bible for animation.
All right, put that closer to the camera. Let's see.
This is Richard Williams, The Animator's Survival Kit. This is basically like the book that they hand out to every animation student who has ever tried to go through like any program ever. Is basically like this guy. Essentially, he was like an intern at Disney when the nine old men of animation were like at their prime and like making like. Pinocchio and going back to Pocahontas, so that like 1940s to like early 1960s era, this guy was basically in the studio. He could just ask all of these like legendary animators any question he wanted to and just put all of that information in the book. When you are asking how much does something move in a particular frame, that depends on how much how much motion you wish to convey in the intervening frames. That's like a weird and like not really specifically helpful answer.
An example, like how much is the locust moving in a per frame versus the I'll use your Masakari, I'll give in to you, but how versus the Masakari's movement, like
yeah, that's actually a great one. I'm pulling up the animation program right now. Can you guys see it?
No, you have to back out of screen share and then go into another one because you can't switch between programs when you're screen sharing.
Got it. So I'm gonna do that. This guy. Okay, so I've got this is the actual like animation, the working file for this portion of the film, right? I'll just scroll all the way back to the beginning. In this case, what I have for the locust is I have it moving on what's called moving on twos, meaning it moves, it gets a new image every other frame for the most part.
And is the background moving every frame?
The background is basically the background is its own sort of solid image. And what I can do is take, oh, it's not showing up here. There's like a physical sort of like camera that you can drag around and like zoom in and out on the entire sort of working file.
Okay.
Ultimately, when this is rendered out as footage, it's rendering out at 24 frames per second, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So like the camera is moving once every frame, the locust is moving once every other frame. In the case of the Masakari, when it shows up later on, it's moving once every three or four frames, depending on the emphasis you want to put on any like particular motion.
Okay.
So like, and this locust running, we have a couple of frames of that leg moving forward, like hitting the ground, and then it pauses for a little bit. It actually gets two frames on that moment right before it springs forward again.
Okay.
This is one of those principles of animation. It's called anticipation.
Okay.
Which is literally like what it does what it says on the tin. If you're like animating a punch, right? The anticipation of that moment is pulling back and it's holding here and beginning to lean forward into it. And you take a couple of frames to just hold that. And then in the next motion, you move very quickly for in like a small amount of frames, right? So if you move very slightly for three frames and then move very quickly for one or two, you create a contrast between like motion and we think of it almost like pulling on a rubber band and letting it snap, right?
Okay. Yep.
So occasionally stuff like that is going to happen.
And you spoke about that on our MechWarrior Revival talk with the I think it was the Blackjack fighting the Orion, where there was kind of like a swing effect, almost like an elasticity in the motion.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can actually tell in that particular shot of the Blackjack, like when it's moving very quickly. It shows up in this film a little bit as well. Occasionally, like the frames will deform a little bit and like stretch. Like people have shared like stupid looking frames from Disney movies. If you've seen that meme of like, we're going to Disney World, right?
Yeah.
That image is actually exactly what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
Because what you're essentially doing in that moment is kind of like cheating the human eye and drawing a motion blur into the frame itself, which is like, it's kooky how people are able to, like, humans are able to see this information and perceive it as motion, which is amazing. We are weird, dumb, brilliant animals. Yeah, so there's that. I think I'm gonna hop back to the original like video file here, and then if we have any additional questions, I could break back into that. Boop. I think it's you. Yeah, there we go. You guys see it? All right.
Yep, we're good.
Here we actually see the background is moving behind the locust. This is in the working file in this. The locust is standing still, and the background canyon is like a moving card that is just shrinking and moving downward and disappearing.
Okay.
In like a loop, right? And then another loop of the same or like a slightly altered version of that card is playing over it. So it's like constantly moving back like that, right? So it's sort of flowing over each other to generate that illusion of things disappearing into the Z-axis. It's kind of cheating it.
That works.
This is one of my favorite shots of the movie, honestly.
Yeah.
It's like big met foot hit ground, establish scale, establish power and motion. Yes.
And somebody in the comments had made something that was actually what popped into my head at one point. I almost pinged you about it during the process, but I didn't. Was that they were like, how does an elemental keep up with the locust? But if you track it, there's a point, there's five of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a spotter, there's these two, there's the SRM, and then there's the attacker.
Yeah,
you got what it. Do you call it? What do you call it? Claw? What's your nickname for that elemental? Scar.
Scarface. Scarface. Yeah, she doesn't have a name yet.
All right, well.
I've got to look into that one, but at that point I just been calling that one like Scarface, or she looks a little bit like a Little Debbie snack cake. I think it's like one of the specific like symbols I had saved right. It was just like Little Debbie.
And for those that weren't here from the beginning, hop on Dan's Patreon and he has basically like a post credit scene and you get to see that like elemental sketch, the actual the person, not the suit in that scene. So yeah, hop on Patreon.com/ShredDubDub. All right, let's keep going.
Yeah, that one will eventually go out to the public. I think that the one that I posted today is like a work in progress, so it's kind of sketchy. So like some stuff going on there. Okay, so we have that shot. We have folks moving forward. The elements coming in, looking over the shoulder. This is from specifically. I posted up a animation of a locust like dodging some autocannon fire earlier in the year, and someone was like, "How are the locusts able to like see something that's about to shoot it from behind?" This is how they see it.
Yeah,
you gotta look at little cameras pointing.
Well, that's been in the novels. They it's a 360 view. It's compressed into either a 180 or a 120 maybe.
I kind of like tweaked it. I kind of like a pilot looking out windows. Just like the machine is talking to her a little bit, which is kind of that's like that. I think that's a fun little interface. Awesome. She's also got like she doesn't have the neuro helmet bean head thing where someone just like has to sit like this and they're like they have no clothes on whatsoever and they just gotta like move.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I know that's like technically how it works in canon, but I like how this.
Hop on Sarna, man. There's lots of different kinds of Nero helmet styles, and definitely by 3059, they're not wearing the giant buckets.
Yeah, this one is actually designed to evoke almost like a race car helmet, and give me a very clear silhouette to draw out, almost like a beak or an avian figure to. That sort of like bit coming forward across the head. That's a fun helmet. I like that helmet. I want to see it come back again.
Awesome.
Elementals jumping how I picture an elemental would like use jump jets.
Yeah.
Like they're called toads. I kind of want to see them like doing that little like leapfrog
awesome.
Thing.
Yeah. Hadn't even thought about that. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, you fire an SRM just to like not necessarily to damage the locust, but just to get it to swerve so that they can't actually dodge the real attack, right? And like one of the things that I actually picked up from Craig Mazin's podcast. Craig Mazin is the writer and director of the Chernobyl series.
Oh god, that's so good.
Yeah. What is it, The Hangover 2? same guy.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, Craig Mazin has a podcast called Script Notes where he just like does screenwriting at you, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
He basically went from one of the episodes, he from the ground up built the movie Finding Nemo using his own writing techniques.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that he uses as his sort of storytelling structure is you have a physical goal that characters need to accomplish, and you have a specific, like, verifiable statement that must be tested and found to be correct or incorrect as the movie progresses, right? Mm-hmm. So Chernobyl is, there is a nuclear accident, you need to, like, clean it up and figure out what happened, right? That's the physical, what the characters have to do. The statement of the series was like laid out specifically by the main character is the cost of lies is that it incurs a debt to the truth, and sooner or later that debt is paid. Right? And the entire series is about what happens when you just sort of like lie about they gave the Germans the propaganda number, so obviously the robot is not going to work on our rooftop, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the things that I had going in this one was organized collective action is going to overcome individual technical skill and self-aggrandizing aggression.
Okay.
Right? So this is a group of people fighting the clans, people who were famous for operating as individual warriors, doing that whole like dueling style combat, right? So we have an elemental that specifically probably ordered the rest of her point to narrow down this locust so she could take it down, get the glory of you know that kill, right?
Yeah.
And maybe those like scars are individual mechs that she herself has taken down.
Oh, I love that. That's good flavor.
Right?
Yep.
And like later on, you see the Masakari like dueling the Centurion and then fighting the one guy with the sniper rifle. It's they are focused on getting the glory of the fight, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as Professor Tex said, meanwhile the Inner Sphere guys are focused on winning.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's really what we have here. This was just this was actually suggested by one of the people in the the BattleTech Art Gallery Discord, which is like
okay.
of, like BattleTech nerds. I was like I posted up saying, can an elemental use is like the laser claw, can it be like magnetized or something so that someone could like peel away the armor of a thing? Or how I'm trying to get this elemental inside another mech. And someone said, actually, if I'm not mistaken, they're reinforced to the point where they could just like batter things through, so you could hold on with the claw and just punch through. And I thought, okay, yeah, like that sells it. What if we sell it a little more by having that elemental use its laser as a laser cutter, burn its way through, and beat the rest of the way into the window?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like,
point blank brutality. That's right there. Uh-huh.
Oh.
That shot was thanks to that conversation.
That's awesome.
Right?
Yeah, but the screen, the heads up display shorting out. Yeah, that's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, one of the folks in the art group that I posted this up to, the ones that were running the hostage scene a couple years back, they've been seeing updates of this, and one of the people in there said, I love like the invasion of privacy and intimacy that particular shot evokes, because like this is the monster breaking through the door, this is here's Johnny, right?
Yeah, no, and that was one of the things. There was some YouTube comments, and this is something that I thought about too, is that and you can tell me if I'm right here, if how I kind of interpret this, that it is not a TV screen showing what's outside from a camera. It is a window with basically a heads-up display integrated inside of this transparent window. And when that heads-up display goes out, it goes to all black and it basically blacks out the window. But it's like, it's not that idea that there's actually a camera showing what's outside inside. Yeah. It's not like an active camouflage type of thing. It's more like there's a circuitry in there, like when you had the rear view facing.
Yeah, it's got some sort of sensor point.
Integrated in the glass that can project on there at any time, and that's what broke. And then that's what basically ruins the transparency.
Yeah,
of the
so it's like some sort of like it's in what I'm showing here is if I'm reading Sarna correctly, is not necessarily what all battle mechs are equipped with. There's a lot of them and they've been around for a long time. Some of them apparently do have like glass cockpits and some of them do have like fully enclosed, right? What I have here is like a hybrid between like Titanfall and the cockpit glass of like MechWarrior Online, so like something in that sort of range. I like how that looks, and I like that it allows you to get away with stuff like this, but
yeah,
just burn your way through. And then this glorious bit of writing. Just someone says shit. Yeah, smash way through. And then here we'd see, we have a problem. We need a solution right now. This is the solution. This is what you do.
Perfect.
Yeah. So this is where that cut of like, now we're getting back into working on this thing. This is
because you sent me the working draft of this way back when we talked about it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it ended right as the locust ran off.
So everything from this frame on out and a couple of the shots before this that were reworked, this is all entirely thanks to the 3025 gallery just giving you the time to do this. Everything here is thanks to you guys.
Patreon, Gallery 3025, you guys are awesome.
Thank you.
This is the magic we made
happen. We got to show a centurion using its shield as a shield. I absolutely love, like, that's a, like, that is, yeah, it's got a shield arm. Of course you would, like, dead side it. And then,
yeah. Oh,
I love the physicality of that. Like, that's, like, it makes mechs into something more than just, like, walking tanks, right? So it's, it gives you, like, an ability to, like, physically manipulate this gigantic machine around you and, like, imbue it with a bit of life. And it's, like, talking back to you at the same time. You're forming this, like, weird relationship with one another. And, like, at some point, like, mechs fighting becomes less, like, tank shooting at each other and more, like World War One, World War Two era dog fights where you have, like, people trying to outthink the other person as you're, like, maneuvering these enormous heavy robots around. It's a good time. And apparently not good enough. And so if we were talking earlier about what frame everything moves on, so this shot of the Masakari coming over and, like, stepping down, that was done one new drawing every 3 frames. The locust moves every 2 frames, right? That just gives me a few, like, fewer frames to draw and still gives the machine a large...
No, you totally get frame. The heaviness. It's crazy how just that one frame, which is like a 50% slowdown effectively, right? Like, changes that dynamic from the locust to the Masakari.
Yeah, you also notice that the Masakari doesn't, like, bob or weave around very much. Mm-hmm. And very specifically, you notice it in this opening walk cycle here. The difference between a walk and a run is that in a run, you have a moment at which both of whatever your subject whatever thing you're drawing, both of their feet are off the ground, right? The Masakari never runs. It always has at least 1 foot on the ground at all times, right? It's right. You're never going to see this thing, like, pulling any of the crazy shenanigans that the locust was doing. It strides.
Well, that's the definition of running for people that don't know. The definition of running is that there is a moment where you have 2 feet off the ground.
Yeah. Like, the Centurion is running. It's not, like, it's, like, it's got, like, a light jog going on, but my ethos on, like, animating this Warhawk is that, oh, I made a mistake. My use of it on
gotcha. Yeah.
As this is that, like, arrogant clan warrior that is just like, oh, these are just, you know, free birth peasants. I can just slay them with ease. So its motions are always, like, almost suave. It's got, like, a swagger to it. I may or may not be trying to visually describe an 85-ton robot as smarmy, but, you know, you work with what you have. Yeah, and then, you know, is this guy actually screwed, or is this a job well done? We've actually pulled this off. This was the moment that was in my head from the beginning. Is, yeah, you turn away because you're a cool guy and you don't look at explosions as the entire plan comes together. Here we have a locust voiding several warranties. That sort of moment of one of the things that really helps. Ah,
kick that throttle forward. I love it. Yeah. You did that in Revival too. It's a great scene.
Yeah. One of the things that really helps convey the physicality of giant robots, and what the thing that I feel personally as someone who's, like, trying to get these things and depict them in a compelling way is they have to be as relatable and as related to the person piloting them as you possibly can. Meaning that whenever you do, like, interspersed shots between the inside and the outside of the cockpit, they have to be, like, you start the motion inside the cockpit and you end it outside, or you started outside and you end it inside, and you see them physically reacting in the same space with each other, right? So that moment of weightlessness and then the pull. This is, I love that shot. That is how a locust do. Does it matter if you don't have armor if you can't get hit?
There it is.
Yeah.
There's the music cut. I love it.
Yeah. There we go. Here you go. Yeah. You see all of these like broken down anti-aircraft guns in the foreground. Warhawk in the midground there. And then these just things come screaming down from the top. Technically, these are fighters that are coming down. They're supposed to be Shylon bombers.
Okay.
Technically, they're supposed to have twice as many missiles per shot as what you're seeing here. But I tried it. It was too much DACA.
Too much DACA.
I'm ashamed. It was too much DACA. It was hard to like see anything going on.
Yeah.
And here we have like giant machine coming down with as much weight as you possibly can. Hold that. And like that was also one of the shots that I had in my brain the entire time, just like this pilot ripping her helmet off, just like.
All right, can we clear this up? Because this is the most popular criticism.
It is.
People don't. All right, let's talk about how your helmets work.
You convey your thoughts, and then I will convey mine.
A neural helmet is not essential for mech motion. A neural helmet is for fine motor skills and complicated motions. And so if a neural helmet was required for just standing up and walking, then any kind of damage to the neural helmet, any kind of software malfunction is basically like getting your gyro destroyed on the mech. That is not how it would work. And so, and also a mech could not be repaired by anybody other than the pilot who's assigned to it if a repair person couldn't walk it from bay one to bay two without calling up, you know, the mech warrior who's an officer down to just do a basic task of walking here and there. So like mechs can move, you know, certainly running in a straight line on flat ground just fine without the neural helmet. They cannot sprint through an enclosed facility while shooting all weapons and dodging Mascari without the Nero helmet. But
yeah,
it can run in a straight line just fine on flat ground with no Nero helmet. So
it is. I do want to be very clear here. This is not recommended. This is voiding the factory warranty. This is riding a bicycle with no handlebars. This is freewheeling. Do not do this. Except for the shot.
Yeah, it is not instant face plant. Let's put it that way.
I might have uncovered one bit of the Sarna article that says actually it would result in a face plant, but I'm not sure if it's talking specifically about like one particular part of the actuators or the entire system. I'm going to be very clear, like, you're not supposed to do this, and she's probably going to get, like, chewed out later on and fill out a whole bunch of paperwork for doing this. And, like, she's got a head wound, right? There's a crack in the neuro helmet. Maybe something's already damaged there on it.
Bruins, you need to embrace Emperor Palpatine.
I'll make it.
Unlimited power!
It's not legal. I'll make it.
I will make it.
This is canon.
Make it canon.
It's like that. We need the Captain Phillips meme. I'm the captain now. It's like, yeah. I'm the canon now. That's where you go.
At the same time, just today, I had the idea of we could redo this shot where instead of having the locust like taking steps. Specifically taking steps with a fighter plane shooting behind her, and it's like to the beat of the music, it's like everything's like motion and pumping. I could like maybe have the locust like skidding to a stop, right, and a big old cloud of dust like a race car.
Don't give in, man. You have artistic freedom.
At the same time, like,
and then we have our splash of color.
Brilliant. Oh yeah. Yeah, just a little blood. This man, I want to make it. I'm going to make it like a recurring joke. He's never able to light that cigar. it just keeps showing up like in every subsequent episode. Like he's about to like have a moment, and then some new nonsense knocks on the door.
Yeah.
In the first case, it's an explosion. In the second place, it's backwash from a dropship coming down. Yeah.
You know, the cool thing, I'll put this is what happened to that beat where the title came out, completely unplanned, completely happenstance, because that beat ended it. And then because we didn't have the title screen in the original version, right? Because we added all this post thing, but it just happened perfect where it cut out. And then you went, I think you originally went to black screen for a moment with that beat. And we just put, I just in my like basic rudimentary editor plugged in like a filler mech warrior
just like put basic text type in.
And I was like that beat worked perfect.
I mean that sudden like impact of black was supposed to be very punchy. And if you want to, if you wanted, like if we're going back to like the opening statement of art / filmmaking is grabbing someone's attention and holding it long enough to tell them something. You have their attention, now let's say something. Boom. There it is.
Awesome.
And then like the completely non-canon Cameron Starr logo over a cartoon bulldog. Like if you've read Twilight of the Clans, you'll know what this image is, even if you've never actually seen it before.
Good.
Like fading in through a bright sunrise.
Awesome.
Hell yeah. This is a very a starkly different tone from any of my previous
that's films, right. All your other stuff end on quite a somber note.
It was a lot of
I hadn't even thought about that.
Death and grief and hopelessness and continuing on in the face of absolutely insurmountable odds, and you're telling a story in the Rasalag Republic in the middle of the clan invasion, you know it's gonna end badly. This little girl's dad dies in front of her, and you know what, let's have a heist movie with a bunch of jokes, visual gags, and have no one die. Let's do this.
All right, so question from Eric Carlson, is that Tex? Is the question.
I want to say it is evoking the spirit of Tex. Yes. But
there you go. There you go, Eric.
I don't know if we have I don't know if we have a specific image for Professor Checkers yet, but I think Checkers is supposed to be like a Steiner man, and the initial draft of this character's backstory puts them from the magistracy of Canopus. Because they really like mercenaries down there. The Locust pilot's Merrick. I don't know if I have anything written out as like characters for the Riflemen of the Centurion yet, but maybe this is the transition into like what do you do next? But I don't know. I kind of like these characters, and I might want to just explore them a little bit further, just like in a non-combat scenario, just like interacting with each other, people being people, because at the core, Battletech is not a story about giant robots. It's a story about people that happens to have giant robots.
Totally.
So that's always what I want to go for every one of these little projects. Tell a story first. Character, 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 character. Yeah.
Excellent.
Well,
if you guys got more questions in the chat, toss a couple bucks in and ask a question, and we'll start kind of feeding some. Yeah, you were talking about the pacing. I do love the fact that we added that intro, and I wonder if I'm just reading too much into it, but the metrics on the video, the YouTube metrics on the video, mm-hmm. are very awesome and unique. It is a nearly flat line between your first scene and the dropship of the bulldog symbol, and there's a somewhat sharp decline during my intro text, which apparently is not as captivating as one would hope, but you're kicking around the 67% retention rate on this video, which is I think almost two or three times more than the second largest one, which is Texas, the Tex podcast. So
It worked. This one captivated a man. I think there's literally like a 3% drop between the first frame and the last frame. Like, you know, but yeah.
I think like the one that got me is when I look at like the like to dislike ratio is like 1,600 thumbs up and 2 thumbs down.
Yeah, I think you're up to 3.
Oh no.
It's like I learned that like you're not legit until people start downvoting really awesome things. Oh man.
It was, you know, those three, they're like the rest of that elemental star.
Yeah. So Eric asked, if that is in text, who are these characters? So maybe give us a little background on this, on who the characters are.
Sure. Basically what I started with for all of these folks is they didn't even have names until like I started doing a separate sort of like follow-up project last week, right? Yep. What I had for these was a personality more than anything else, right? We have a commander that is cool, unflappable, doesn't emote very strongly. Basically what I see them as is like very much like a support character for the rest of the cast. You only ever see them really sort of emote when he is highlighting the actions or peril of another person. Right, so like you see this shot of like getting the attention of the Masakari here. He's like, oh yeah, come at me, bro. But he's not saying that for himself. He's saying that because he's got like one of the people who's like supposed to be like under his command. Like they're actually the people who are taking command there, right?
Yeah.
He only starts directly shooting at the Masakari after it begins to track the ejection pod of one of his other sort of lancemates. Like.
No, like, I think it's brilliant. Like he's pulling the distraction, he's pulling the attention both away from the Centurion and away from the base, which is their entire job.
Exactly what they want to do. Yeah.
To pull them away from the base. And so
I think
then when he goes to light a cigar, are you saying that he knows the locust is in the base and he's done his job? Because I took it as a kind of like, all right, I'm done. This is my time. You know, lighting up to kind of his first final moments because that Masakari is about to squish him. And then, you know, he saves the day. Are you saying that, like, he knew that Locust was happening, that Locust was already in the base?
I'm wondering if that is... He might actually not know himself.
Okay.
He might be... This might be the point of, like, I've done everything that I can.
Yeah.
And either I'm screwed now...
Yeah.
Or this is going to go off without a hitch.
Well, I took it as that. And I took it as like, I just saved my man that ejected from the Centurion by pulling us so he can get away. And now he's coming for me. All right, this is it. I've lived a good life. Let's light it up before I go. And then boom, the plan comes together.
Yeah. I think so. I had in the notes somewhere, it was like a hyper-protective mother hen with a mustache. Like, yeah,
perfect.
That is his person. Then we have our locust pilot who, if you notice, emotes a whole lot more, right? Mm-hmm. And she gets frustrated with things, and she like gets kind of like excited to like that the job's starting, right? So like you see her like a little grin there, right? And like even that bit at the end, right? Like
totally.
This dude is not going to like pull off his helmet and like whoop with joy. He's just gonna be like, oh thank God, finally. Right? He's just a tired old man, and he just wants to like get paid and go home and make sure everyone else can go home too.
Awesome.
And this kid's just like out having an adventure.
Shout out to Griffin Wilson there for chipping in. You know, says it's his first contribution on Super Chat. So,
oh, thanks, Griffin.
A little more support towards Bruins.
Yeah, I think what I have specifically, like what I know for backstory, is two things about this character here. One, she has a robotic leg, an artificial leg, She's from Merrick, right? She's from the Free Worlds League. They don't like people with like cybernetic like implants, right?
Okay.
So I have this idea of like, this happened like very, very young when she was in like an incident, like a farming incident with an agromech.
Okay.
And her family actually started like moving around from the Free Worlds League, and they ended up in the Draconis Combine around the time of like 3050.
Yeah.
A little planet called Turtle Bay. Which, you've read like the Clan Invasion, the Twilight of the Clans, she has a very good reason to not like the Smoke Jaguars. she has a very good reason to not like these people.
Yep.
Yeah, and so I like the idea of putting someone like that in a situation where not only do they have to fight like get a little bit of, I don't know if like revenge or justice or like doing something back, but also what I really want to drive at is have a whole bunch of characters who are essentially unmoored from their like respective nationalities across the Inner Sphere and across clan space, suddenly having to find like different and unexpected bonds with each other, right? And like I love that like a found family sort of story. And I think something like a slapdash mercenary company in the middle of Operation Bulldog sounds like a great background for that sort of thing. Definitely. If you guys will give me just one moment, this cat has been very patient and it is about 10 minutes past his dinner time.
All right.
That'll be about 2 minutes.
Perfect. I'll use it for a kind of promo. So everybody, quick shout out to sponsor Renegade HVG, Fortress Miniatures and Games. Without their support, there's a lot of different things I couldn't do with the channel. So definitely check them out, fortressminiaturesandgames.com. Send them your business. It's well worth it. The prices are incredible. Shipping is super fast. The more support you send them, the more I appreciate it because they do a lot for this channel. And definitely our goal is to get some more patrons over for Daniel here during this live chat. So maybe take a moment to swing by patreon.com/sirdubdub and sign up as a Patreon there. It costs a cup of coffee a month, people, you know, kind of hop in, throw some help toward this amazing creative talent. And let's see what else that Dan can give for us. And last but not least, if you want to support a little bit broader, you can hop on to patreon.com/gallery3025, which is the community fund that I've been directing to try to support artists like Dan here with grants so that they can do more work in the BattleTech MechWarrior IP. So create more awesome content for us. And if you have a question in the chat, you know, hop on that super chat, you know, just hit that dollar sign at the bottom of the chat window, throw in a couple bucks, ask a question, and we'll be happy to field it. But yeah. So that post credits scene. So what are we, what's next? Well, one, I guess this is another question. You know, people keep asking, you know, is this like a work in progress? Are you going to finish this? And so I'll let you answer that. Like, you know, what is Animatic? What was your end goal with this? And kind of what are your kind of creative goals moving forward that you want to share with the community?
Yeah. Oh man. At this point, I feel like what I would like to do is move on to some sort of either continuation of this story or a new story.
Mm-hmm.
The trouble with like going back and finishing this is a very large and dynamic animation.
Yeah.
Ultimately it's just going to take a bunch of time to do.
Yeah.
And I think
maybe give people an idea of the time. All right. So give us a little time. You know, this, you know, Dan is not making money off this. You know, he's not a BattleTech employee. This is all kind of fan made on his time, on his dime. You know, Dan has other work too. Unfortunately, it is not making BattleTech animation. So Tops, if you're listening, maybe you can hire this man.
But yeah, you know, how much time does it get to make the storyboard and then polish off this as well as the score? And then so people have a little appreciation, how much of your non-paying, bill-paying time would it take to actually finish this in kind of like a freehead style polished version?
Yeah, so I'm just going to take this moment to the end of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
This moment of Locust comes around the edge, shooting at the guns coming out, the jump, the turn, the running towards the camera. This is all animating on twos, which is animating the Locust every other frame.
Mm-hmm.
This is with like very rough sketched out, like very almost like messy lines, right? It's like, here's what the motion looks like. It conveys what the motion's supposed to be. Great, good. Do we need to draw every single vent and how all the drawings work? Don't have time for that. Just moving on, keep drawing, right? Mm-hmm. Get that out, draw the rest of the Locust coming in, firing, and that jump. Okay, we'll just take that moment, right? That was, so from here to that jump was, I want to say like 20 to 30 hours of work. It's animation takes a long time.
Let's rewind that. That was 4 seconds.
This is
6 or 7 seconds.
Seven seconds.
So 30 hours for 7 seconds, guys.
About that. So, of like, you know, bare bones.
Yeah. So right? reasonable asks, you know, when you're asking for more, you know, it's kind of the.
I think it's from like this point to the end of the film was done in like the last week before we uploaded. Mm-hmm. I came home from a 10-hour shifts back to back at a weekend job working in a warehouse, and just sat down that Sunday night and started drawing and basically didn't stop until Thursday. Just to make things, put it down, get the renders out. And then after that, we spent a good like 3 or 4 days going back and forth and like rendering and re-rendering the video. Mm-hmm. To make sure that like the entry and exit text worked well, to go back and like into, because I wrote all of the music, meaning I had to go back and rescore all of the music as well. Mm-hmm. So that was getting this film over the finish line in the state that it is right now was at the very least like a week and a half of solid like 10 to 12 to 16 hour days every day, right? Yeah. And a lot of that comes down to that is a failure of time management on my part, but it does physically require a lot of work to do. Yeah. And what I'd like to do in the future is work on more of my ability to draw characters, have characters do interesting things, have them figure out some way to like have them like speak to each other, have dialogue, maybe with voice actors, maybe with this like kind of like comic book style that I'm playing around with, tell more stories and get good at telling a lot of stories quickly, right? So you could spend 1,000 hours learning how to make one very good vase, right? Or you could make 1,000 vases and know how to do one really good one very quickly.
Right.
So ultimately, I think what I'd like to do is make more content, make more new things, and make more new stories for people. And if this thing starts like building momentum and allowing me more time to come back in and polish things, I would love to go back and like finish Freehead and finish this one and like do a whole bunch of new, fully rendered out and polished stuff.
Well, yeah. The Warhammer community was tossing $20,000 a month to Siama Peterson's Astartes Patreon. So
that is easily enough.
Can be,
It can be done, people, but you have to kind of put your money where your mouth is. But but yeah, and we got a question for Wildcat asking about how to kind of get an artist for Gallery 3025. So my goal with Gallery 3025 is to kind of find people who are doing something very unique and very high quality, you know, for BattleTech, you know, and kind of trying to, and in terms of like static art stuff, you know, kind of a harkening back to the kind of painting style stuff that we saw from guys like Bruce Jensen and Jim Holloway and Boris Vallejo. And then, you know, beyond that, you know, certainly animation style. And as I said kind of earlier in the stream, my next thought on the project is to hire a professional concept artist to basically kind of lay out a short story for BattleTech. And so I'll send him a short story and I'll just find out how much per piece of it takes to get concept art. If I'm lucky, I can find someone that lives in Montana, you know, or Minnesota, like Bruins here, where the cost of living is dirt cheap, and not a concept artist that lives in LA. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we're looking at Jared Owen to kind of get that elemental focus piece, which will probably be an elemental kind of, I'm imagining something like in the mix of an intense battle, maybe even a nighttime battle would be cool. So I don't know how the lighting would work on that. Basically, like, you know, imagine kind of like a Braveheart battlefield chaos type of scene, and the elemental, but it's going to be focused on the elemental doing elemental things in the middle of that scene. So
that sounds awesome.
That's what I'm looking at for the gallery. You know, it's going to take some funding. We're almost up to $300 a month, kind of coming in to kind of push back out to various artists. So yeah, well, maybe we can bump that over $300 a month from people watching the stream, hopping onto that that gallery. Gallery 3025 on Patreon. But yeah, cool. Excellent. Well, going back and polishing it for you, I mean, I can throw my opinion that, you know, I think Freehike gets the job done, man. You know, I mean, if you get to where you're working professionally and you can do that, sure. But I mean, I love this. Freehead is still my favorite. I guess Somber, you know, Somber wins out for me, and I've spent literally hundreds of hours playing MechWarrior 3, so that soundtrack hits me in a very special way.
Yep.
But you know, yeah, and I still talk about beard goals. My beard goals are the guy in the helicopter, the flowing.
Yes, and, the majestically flowing beard.
Unfortunately, he also has a lot of majestic going on up here, and I've lost half of that. All my hair is behind the microphone. I promise, you know, guys, that there is some back there.
But, it is going to be like a spiking shampoo commercial.
I was trying to go. That inspired me. I legit was trying to kind of go, not cutting my beard for a long time, but I was heavy into the hobo look, and I was like, I can't keep this. I do actually have to work for a living, and I can't go for my free head beard Russell Hogg beard goal, but yeah.
And like, one of the things with animation is the more you do it, the faster you're going to be at it.
Yeah,
like quite simply, like that's how that works. Like this opening shot of the Warhawk stepping out from behind the base here, like this took me an entire night of just like drawing and redrawing and drawing and redrawing. It's like everything it was frustrating to try to figure out how this character moves in perspective. But then like later on, after having a bunch of practice drawing that locust over and over again, getting this one like really solid step from the same mech, it took like, I don't know, maybe 1 to 2 hours to like get that motion down how I wanted it, and then going in and like fixing everything back up again. So like you're able to build a skill set and able to build momentum the more that you do it. So
yeah,
what I think I would like to see going forward is trying to make content that like looks like good enough to work, and be able to turn that out in a quick and efficient manner. And as I go, basically build on the foundations of what I have here and just have things become like nicer and nicer every time. And then once I have a good pipeline down, go back to some of the older stuff and just polish the hell out of that too.
Yeah. So we got another question here by Griffin. This is actually one I can send
answer completely is that if you go to the, I believe it's the Catalyst Games website for in the tab for BattleTech, he was asking, you know, how do you go about sending a story proposal for BattleTech? So if you want to write for BattleTech a short story, you know, especially the stuff that they're putting out in Shrapnel right now, you can submit that story on their website. They have a link that you can email your story to. I think it goes to John Helfer, I think is the editor there now. So send that story on, you know, send it on as something that they can throw in an upcoming Shrapnel. And you could definitely be a published artist. I saw a lot of names from the community that I recognized in the last issue of Shrapnel. So people are submitting stuff and getting it published. So, so Griffin, nice. Yeah, definitely, you'll do that, toss it in. Let's see that fan fiction of yours become canon fiction, no more fan fiction. But yeah.
I just keep writing it anyway. Just keep making things. Just keep doing it. We need people to just keep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Making things is good for you. It is good for your brain. It is good for your heart. It is good for your body. Except when you kill yourself on animation. Animators are stupid. Everyone else is making things. You guys are doing great. Keep doing it.
I just find it hard working behind a screen so much. I went from, you know, I was an athletics coach, as you know, and I mean, I was on the water coaching athletes, and then suddenly I got kicked behind a computer screen. And, you know, I love doing Renegade HPG, you know, and I've been doing a lot of computer and YouTube stuff for my professional stuff, but man, oh, it's so hard to kind of just stare at a screen all day, you know. But so yeah, if you're gonna draw recreationally, do it on paper.
Can I double and triple that for you?
Yeah, I bet.
So like this film was made entirely on this computer here, which is a tablet that you draw on the screen, right? So imagine not only are you staring at a screen for like several hours a day, you're staring at a screen like this close to you.
Mm-hmm.
As you're getting a thing, as you're leaning over, as you've been drawing with your drawing hand for several hours at a time, and man, like at the end of the day, it felt like the like my neck muscles were like a crane holding up some sort of giant bowling ball. It's a good time.
That's tough. All right, bud. That was a great talk. You know, I think we covered a lot of stuff. You know, Mystic just tossed some money. Just take my money is what he said. So we will convert that money into some BattleTech art in the future, Dan will. But So thanks a ton, Dan, for joining us and for producing this incredible, you know, short story animation. I love it. You know, YouTube is finally warranted worthy of sharing. And so now you're getting some super, some views are kind of actually accelerating on that. So hopefully it kind of expands and ultimately
is line going up.
The inflection of the line has gone up. And so we are steeper rise than we were even at launch. So
nice.
You know, good thing there. So maybe we'll get people even outside of BattleTech to really appreciate how amazing this universe is. And, you know, certainly that's thanks to your talent, Dan. And thanks to all the people that support Gallery 3025 for helping, you know, make this happen. And for Tex for igniting the passion and Bruins again and giving them that just do it, mentality.
Yeah.
And of course, thanks for everybody that's been watching the stream and contributing. I think we're it. So thanks again for everybody. Quick shout out again to Fortress Miniatures and Games, sponsor for Renegade HPG. Support Dan on Patreon at Sir Dubdub. And that's it. So we'll wrap up. Thank you very much, everyone, and have an awesome night.
Thanks, folks. Cheers.
All right.